Welcome to this Business Marketing Club webinar. My name's Dave Stevens. This webinar is being recorded and will be available on our podcast stream afterwards. The recording quality isn't as good as our usual podcast, as it's all done over the phone, so apologies for that. This is a videocast from the Business Marketing Club, the BMC, and the BMC is a network for B2B marketers. It's run by B2B marketers, and it's run for passion, not profit. We run mentoring schemes, we run podcasts, we run newsletters, and in normal times, we also run face-to-face events throughout the UK. So please, if you've not come across us before, do look us up at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. This is our first webinar, but the response has been absolutely fantastic. We've been overwhelmed with the number of people wanting to sign up for this, and we're already planning to do more. So please do share feedback with us at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. or to me personally at davestevensnow@gmail.com with any feedback or thoughts as to where we go from here. As it's our first webinar, there'll be a whole host of things that could potentially go wrong. So here come my apologies now for any technical glitches, any gaps in transition between speakers, any sound issues, any chairperson lapses that you get over the course of the next 45 minutes or so. We're new to this. I promise you we'll get better. So let's get started. We live in extraordinary times. The coronavirus outbreak has swept the world, and everybody needs to think differently in its wake. In one sense, this is a time for scientists, for political leaders, for ourselves focusing on our communities and our loved ones. And it might seem, therefore, a bit parochial to want to talk about customers and about branding and strategy, tactics and business work practices. In short, talking about business-to-business marketing. But business needs to continue, and B2B marketers need to drive demand like never before. So what do B2B marketers need to do differently? For some, that'll be about changing work practices. What elements of B2B marketing can you do best remotely? What approaches or processes or technologies work in this new space? For others, it'll be about changing your marketing messages. What are the do's and the don'ts in this new environment? For others still, it'll be about changing your marketing mix. But is the only solution to stopping live events to go online? We're not here in this webcast to advise people about how to behave in this unprecedented situation. But what we can do is share some experiences and some thoughts. And today we'll hear from four speakers, each of them coming from very different parts of the B2B marketing world, who will address the elements of that brief that they themselves choose to, the things that are most important to them right now. And we'll hear about their views through their own lens. So if you're joining via a computer, you can see the presenters on the a webcam. We'll also do a few polls in order to gauge current opinion. So you can only answer those polls, obviously, if you're logged into the screen share. My first speaker was going to be Laura, but as she's not managed to pop back in yet, I'm instead going to go to Mark to kick us off. So Mark will come from a client-side marketing perspective, but from a corporate business. Mark Larwood is head of strategic customer marketing at O2, and he's also one of the instigators behind this webcast initiative. So Mark, thank you for joining us. The floor is yours.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dave. Thank you for the invitation. So I guess, you know, this is all very fluid situation for us. And our marketing plans are all sort of formulating to take account of recent situations. But for me, I think there are sort of three sort of challenging areas that we're looking at. And those are, you know, quite obviously sort of people, technology, and then our marketing activity. So I'm going to take those kind of in turn. I think the people and technology ones kind of go together well anyway. I think, you know, in responding to the current situation from a work and technology perspective, for us in marketing and certainly within Telefonica, it's fairly straightforward. You know, we're all knowledge workers. We just need a device and an internet connection, and we're up and running. And I think for a lot of people in our organization, at least, it's very similar. You know, we've embraced digital workplace for the last, you know, several years. So I think disruption to us is less acute than it is for some organizations. We're also aware that it's very, very different for other organizations. So we're going through this process of trying to help educate and help our customers rather than sell to them at this point in time. But I think, so technology is, you know, could be quite easily fixed, I think, with time. And there are certainly some things off the shelf that people can, you know, take advantage of. But I think for me, it's more the cultural elements which are really important rather than the technical. How do you keep that sense of team within an organization when you've been used to sort of, you know, more cheek by jowl kind of communications? I think many of my colleagues are, you know, these hybrid kind of home mobile office workers for some time, so you're kind of used to it, but it's a bit of a challenge for a lot of organization. And I think that sense of isolation can really grow for people, and despite those back-to-back calls that we all find ourselves on, there is that sense of being isolated and away from people quite sense. So, you know, so what do we do about that? Well, I think we use video where we can. You know, we have regular team updates, and just this week I've instigated this kind of, you know, this every morning 5-minute catch up, water cooler, coffee moment, not work related, nothing like that, much more around, you know, no agenda, just having a chat really, just to kind of keep in touch with people. I had a good idea earlier, which was around having remote team lunches. You know, bring your own lunch, or maybe even get, you know, pizza delivered, but, you know, kind of eat together and try and keep those sort of team things. So I think we'll see more of those things develop as we go on, people finding different ways of doing things like that. So technology and people, I think, you know, are really important. But then it comes to the biggest challenge for us, I think, or rather the one that I don't really have an answer for right now, is what we do with our marketing and our communications. It really is the hardest part, you know, particularly when it comes to events and things like that. You know, we do a lot of live events, really, from, you know, your box standard 12 people round table to inviting 1,000 customers to come and join us at the O2 and have a really big show, you know. And there's different challenges for those. I mean, and how we do those in the current environment is really, or current situation is quite tricky. But we're looking at those alternatives, but we're certainly not looking to commit to anything much before the autumn, to be perfectly honest. And where we are having to commit to things, we're not committing resource any more than we have to, or committing finances any more than we have to, really. So whilst I think we can replace those things with, you know, new ways of doing things, what I think we lose is that ability to build really strong relationships with our customers. You know, we have really we have lots of activity aimed at talking to our strategic, our closest, most important customers, which help us build our reputation and relationships and things. And I think for us, those are the challenges we face right now. How do we replace those? How do you really replace those, you know, those things which you really can't get better than face-to-face for? You know, I don't think a series of webinars is the answer to this, even though this is the second one I've been on today. You know, so looking at other sort of tools that we can use, really, challenges for us. You know, we're looking at breaking down those major events that we have, which roll over a full day, into more bite-sized chunks. But again, how do you get people to really engage with those things when, like me, there's a dog snoring in the corner, you know, your window cleaner comes and whacks the brush against the window when you're in the midst of something, and all these perils of working from home, which you kind of get used to and have to make allowances for, I suppose. But it's how do you really keep, you know, that people are engaged when you're used to having them in the room, locking the doors and, you know, giving them coffee every couple of hours. But other than that, you know, they are a captive audience. So we're looking at several things. I don't have the answers. I'm really here just to ask questions and see what other people think, I think, more than anything. But I think there was one positive for me was a meeting that we held last week. It was our advisory council meeting. So it's hosted by our COO. You know, we get a dozen CXOs from, you know, leading UK customers together. It was going to be at a prestigious London venue, but yet we had to flip that at the very last moment to an online meeting, not too dissimilar to this, really. And I was really nervous. I think, you know, is this going to work? You know, these people, but actually it worked really well. So I think those online meetings can work. And we should be doing more of those anyway. But for me, those things intersperse with the more relationship building events that you have, the more face-to-face activities. We're going to miss those. So how do we fix those? And I think, again, I don't have any answers or any pearls of wisdom to really share here outside of, you know, a challenge, really. But for me, the crux of this is how do we bring the experience into our marketing when we are no longer able to be with people face to face. You know, again, maybe I'm looking at this from the wrong perspective. Maybe I need to take a different frame the question in a different way. But right now, it's a challenge. And yes, we'll do, I think we'll do a lot of awareness building, top of the funnel activity. It remains to be seen whether customers are still wanting to convert lower down the funnel, or whether they're sort of battening down the hatches and, you know, not prepared to invest in things. Only time will tell. But I think, you know, this is a, you know, a big moment in time, and one which will disrupt and will maybe have some positive outcomes as well. But right now we're in the midst of it and trying to find different ways of doing, you know, what we take for granted over the last while, and particularly those sort of, you know, event activities and those experiential, getting people, you know, to really open up and have those face-to-face opportunities, I think are missing, really. And that was kind of what I wanted to talk about, Dave, this morning, really just frame a question to everybody else, really, rather than having any answers, I'm afraid. Be interested to know what the other panelists think.
Thank you very much. And actually linked to that, we've got a poll. I don't see what can possibly go wrong with this, but the poll, which hopefully is being triggered right now as we speak, is asking people on the phone to vote as to what you plan to do about your cancelled events. Do you simply run those events when all of this is over? Do you take the content and instead run it as a digital or interactive piece, as a webinar or as a video conference? Do you run the content in a one-way situation on a website or a brochureware or a podcast or a combination of the above? We're collecting responses now. 50, 60% of people have voted so far. Let's give it a moment or two longer. And so we're at sort of 75% of people having voted, and so far the about a quarter of those people are in a place where they're looking at running that content as digital interactive content like webinars, and about 12% are simply looking at running the events when all of this is over. And as you can see, 60% or so are looking at a combination of the above. Thank you for that. What I want to do now is come to our next speaker, who is also from the client side marketing world, but this time in an SME business. Laura Hughes is the head of marketing at Pay Dashboard, which is a digital payslip platform. Laura, how's this affecting you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite an interesting one for SMEs, Dave, because the great news is that, you know, we have less of our money is tied up in big events. They're not big expenditure things for us. But then the bad news for an SME is we've got less budget to put towards other interim measures. So it's a really interesting challenge. I think actually the biggest risk that the client-side SMEs are facing is if you've got a marketing team of one or two people, and then one of those gets ill and is out of action for a few days, that could have a real impact on the wider business. So client-side SME marketers, I think, really need to be thinking about their business continuity. you know, what's going to happen if suddenly one out of the two team members is, you know, off sick for 3-4 days, not feeling well enough to work? You know, what's going to stop? What's going to kind of continue? I think one of the really interesting things for an SME, though, is where you've got smaller amount of marketing resources in the business. They're going to be spread out through, you know, wider aspects of the business. So doing bits of internal comms, demand generation, brand, customer comms. So for us, I think it's also about refocusing our efforts. You know, what's going to have the biggest impact right now? We're all very focused, obviously, on demand generation and lead generation. But you know what? If our prospects aren't listening, if they've got bigger issues on, then let's focus on the areas of the business that are going to be more effective, like, you know, supporting customers. And I also think that I know that, you know, events has come up as, you know, the big casualty of B2B marketing. But there are going to be wider implications for other channels. I mean, you know, direct mail, for example, you're sending that to a customer's office, but the staff aren't there. So where's that direct mail going? So that's going to be put on hold. You know, I think in the immediate term, PR is going to be a lot less effective because all the column inches are being taken up by, you know, coronavirus. And that's all that really people are interested in right now. Now that might change when the dust settles a little bit. But look, this is going to be a really difficult time for SMEs. You know, whatever industry, I mean, certain industries are obviously having a really hard time, but the uncertainty for SMEs in particular is quite difficult. But I just say, I think that the marketing department, you know, we have a real opportunity here to step up, to be innovative, to be creative, to drive forward momentum where it might be failing in other places. So I think that this really should be something that B2B marketers are, you know, getting with both hands and kind of saying, right, you know, how are we going to affect change and drive stuff forward? Because it's not going to happen from outside anymore. This has to happen from within.
Laura, thank you very much. So our third speaker will present a view from the agency side world. Ben Danzi is the CEO of Omobono, which is a digital agency for business brands. Ben, over to you.
Dave, thank you very much. And if you've got a camera on, one of the advantages of working at home is that I can watch my chickens. And I've literally
you've
just...
Eggs. No one else in the country has got eggs.
Yeah, well, there we go. I'm lucky I've got eggs. So I should be in Vegas at the moment, and our team in our Chicago office have spent from January 1 to now preparing for this huge event for SAP, 3,000 people, and got cancelled last week. And just, you know, the emotional scar for that, for the people delivering it, was just massive. But, you know, the good news is that literally right now that event is taking place online, and they have created, they've taken all the assets, all the speakers that were due to speak have spoken, and it's being put together now as a live broadcast, started at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And so you can go in and have this event experience. You can kind of browse the different rooms where different types of content is taking place. And it's surprisingly effective. And last time I looked, there were kind of 20,000 views for the keynote speaker. So what was a kind of a team in pieces about 2 weeks ago when the news of this cancellation came through, the team actually got together and said, we can put together a really amazing package. And I think, you know, that's what we've all got to do now, is think about what we did yesterday is no longer going to work for tomorrow. So there can be some positives. So at Omobono, we run a business of about 100 people, UK and US. And I thought I'd just give you a bit of perspective about what it's like, what it's been like inside our business, and what it's been like with our clients. And then just a sort of few thoughts about, you know, where the world is pointing right now, if I may. So first off, people, I think as Mark said, you know, they are the kind of the number one, perhaps the only thing of importance at the moment. And we've been doing this program in the company for the last 6 months that we call Omobono 2.0, which is all about kind of facing into uncertainty. And we've been trying to train the whole company about leading into uncertainty and embracing uncertainty. And if I can give you a quote about it, the definition of vulnerability is uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. But vulnerability is not weakness. It's our most accurate measure of courage. And there's a lady called Brené Brown who said that. And I think it's kind of okay for everyone right now to say, you know, we don't know. You know, Mark was good enough to say he doesn't know the answers. You know, none of us can possibly know what's around the corner at the moment. So for all of us that feel a bit overwhelmed and a bit scared and, you know, frequently frightened by what's going on, it's okay, because we are all dealing with that situation. You then have to take that into your own company and say, well, what can you do to help people that you can't walk over to their desk anymore and say, you know, are you okay? You know, you've got to create different spaces to do that. So, and I do think, you know, the major implications of coronavirus are not going to be health issues for most people. It's either going to be wealth issues or mental health issues. And that's what we as employers have really got to prepare for. And I think, you know, Mark and Laura, you talked about the kind of the isolation that people are going to feel. So we've done a lot of work on communication. So we're, you know, the good thing is we've got 100% of our workforce working remotely at home. I think the only thing that we had to do was get a virtual server for Sage so that we could run our finances. Everything else was good. But Teams has been working incredibly well. Laura, as an SME, Microsoft are offering 6 months free usage of Teams, which is a really nice example of a big company saying, here's some help for small businesses. Teams is, you know, a video-based, you know, communication channel. We do all our kind of meetings through it. We had an amazing meeting yesterday afternoon with about 50 or 60 people. We did a full creative review of all the work that's going on in the company. There was a chat going down the right-hand side of the screen. And, you know, we really felt like we were a group of people having a chat. Last Friday, you know, like all agencies, we like to have a, you know, glass of lemonade on a Friday afternoon. This last week, we did it online and everyone just had a couple of minutes to say what they were doing, what their non-alcoholic cocktail of choice was. And it just created a sense of humanity, which, you know, technology has a, you know, a specialist skill to try and remove. So community's been really important. Things like cloud, you know, we've done all the basics to increase Dropbox and so on, but really we've just been thinking about people and how that. In terms of our business, we got our business continuity plan out. We've been through that. You know, as someone running a business, we thought pretty carefully about cash and, you know, what the implications of that are, because for an SME, these are real issues that are going to face businesses sooner or later over the coming months. I love anything Japanese, and their Japanese businesses are famous for hoarding cash. They don't often do very clever stuff with it, but they love to kind of squirrel it away. So well out of this. And the other thing that we're doing at the moment is kind of modeling scenarios at different levels of revenue over the coming kind of quarters ahead, because I just think it's really important for companies to think, well, if it's this or this, you know, what's our cost kind of base based on that sort of revenue. So that's proving very useful. And I think on the kind of in terms of our customers, what's interesting is a couple of the account directors have said this week they have had some of the best conversations that they've ever had with clients. Because I think, you know, we are all now in these kind of environments of this personal space behind us, where I think you can actually think a bit more. And we have created workplaces which are tremendously overstimulated. And actually to sit here with just myself and my screen and have to actually think about issues, it is surprisingly productive. I won't talk about government support much, but I think there isn't much of it for businesses at the moment. Other European countries, there's quite a lot being made available. There's nothing for us at the moment. But I think longer term, businesses need to think about, you know, debt. As a business, we have no debt. But, you know, if you have cash financing facilities, you need to draw it down now, is I think my suggestion. AB InBev drew down $9 billion of available loans this morning, just because they could. They didn't need the money, but they know that they'll need it in 3 to 6 months. So people are literally grabbing money from wherever they can. So in terms of, you know, our industry and the kind of practical aspects of doing marketing in an utterly changed world, I think this week it's all about small moves. It's about test and learn. It's about focusing on our clients as human beings. You know, Mark at someone like O2 and Laura at her business, Pay by Dashboard, you know, they don't have the answers either. You know, you all sort of secretly think someone's going to have an answer to this situation. None of us do. I think what we will try to do as a company that seeks to serve our customers, business customers, is look into their ecosystems and what are the really important relationships that our customers have with their end customer. Because I think if you see the points of need, we're then in a better position to serve them. You know, there may be ways that they can tilt their businesses from being more online at the moment to perhaps being more offline. Some of the Chinese businesses that are beginning to come out of coronavirus have managed that quite effectively. I think Mark made a really important point, which is, you know, just meet their needs at the moment. Don't try and sell people stuff. You know, no one's in a mood to kind of buy at the moment, but we still have needs that we need met. And, you know, the thing that we all need to remember as professional marketers is, you know, it is one of the big value creating engines in the economy, and money is going to be in short supply, and it is our job to drive the economy. So, you know, we have a job to do. You know, I have a job to do to look after the old lady who lives opposite, but I also have a job to do at work. So we can do that. I think in terms of, you know, I'm sure marketing budgets are being cut, but what do you do with that marketing budget? I think, you know, we would probably say longer term brand building is, you know, going to be a better use of less budget rather than perhaps short term performance marketing. But we can maybe discuss that. And well, I think
Ben, sorry to interrupt you. Actually, if we stop here, because we have a poll on that very subject that we can talk to, which is around how people are going to utilize their marketing budget. So are you planning to repurpose your marketing budget to respond to the crisis? No, you're going to leave your arrangements as they are, or you're going to do more brand marketing, or in terms of your mix, or else you're going to repurpose your budget to do a bit more in the way of lead generation marketing. Please vote now, and let's see how that comes out. It looks like Ben is winning the day at the moment. So we have about 50% of people so far have said yes, do more brand marketing. Let's give it a moment or two longer. Okay, so if we close it there, it's basically 50% saying yes, do more brand marketing, which I guess, Ben, is vindication to what you're saying.
Okay, interesting, thank you. So maybe just three final points to sort of close out on, which is more just kind of thoughts, really. One is, you know, the word touch point has been used a huge amount over the last few years. You know, what are the touch points that we can, you know, find and service with our customers? And that's kind of, you know, it's quite ironic now, isn't it? Because we're not even allowed to shake hands or kiss people hello at the door, which is so extraordinary on a human level that physical contact can no longer happen. But what's that going to mean in our business life? And, you know, we've got a financial services client that we were talking about earlier this morning, and thinking, how do we help, you know, possibly quite a traditional bunch of people do selling in the financial services space. So we were trying to think of some tools to help them, you know, augment the way that they do perhaps Teams calls or online selling. But I think those touch points are important. How people make decisions, you know, how do I make a decision here on my own in this room, with no stimuli around me, about making an investment, about Mark, you know, spinning up his events in the autumn. I think that's worth thinking around. And finally, I think that this opportunity of this has created a space for us to think is the kind of the exciting unknown bit about where we are now. We've all got suddenly a lot more time. How we use it, I think, is quite interesting. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, Ben, thanks very much. Thank you. Our final speaker represents the event services industry. Simon Tracy is the group CEO of Vibration Group. Simon, thanks for coming on. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Dave. So I'm the CEO of the Vibration Group, which unfortunately, given the current time, is a pure event services group. So as everyone said before me, is probably the most hit of everybody. I've spent 25 years now persuading people of the power of events, and it's nice to hear people like Mark say how powerful they are. The sadness is obviously almost without exception, we've seen every single event pretty much be cancelled between the 1st of April and the end of August. And that is sort of in line with what Mark was saying. I'm more than happy to answer questions at the end, but I think from my point of view, it might be useful just to give you some insight into what's happening in the events industry. The last couple of weeks, we as a group obviously saw this coming, fortunately, fairly early on. So the first thing we did is started building up war chests in our business. And what I mean by that is making sure that we got all of our debt in. We still have a bit of debt in terms of people owing us money. But my view is the more we could get in, the earlier we could get in, the better prepared we'd be for this current cycle we're in. And then we then looked at cost cutting. As Ben said, we're trying really, really hard to retain as many staff as possible. I'd love to say that we'll retain 100%, but the practicalness of that is almost impossible, because once we've created a war chest and we've looked at cost cutting, we're basically looking at 5 months of trade with zero revenue and still lots of overheads. So we're basically looking at our cash burn. Is the best way of putting it. We were sort of fairly protected when this first came around, because what we saw in March is a lot of events being cancelled, including things like Disney Plus's European launch, and they'd already built their event at one of our venues, through to SAP, interestingly. We had an SAP event at Printworks. And they were taking those decisions really to do with brand and corporate image. So from a revenue point of view, that was fine for us. The phase we're in now is obviously with a total shutdown imminent, and obviously I'm on loads of panels and lobbying government, and my understanding is that Boris Johnson, if not tonight, tomorrow, will probably announce a shutdown of an initial period of about 6 weeks, which is likely to get extended. And that will be for all gatherings for 50 plus people. So a really, really tight control on the events industry, probably. Some people say it's long overdue, and some people say it's as tight as they may be imagined. But I think that's what we're looking at for the end of this week. So what does that mean for us? Obviously a total inability to run events. So we're in the process of speaking to all the people who have got events in our venues over the next 5 months to look at rescheduling. It is promising to hear the views of people like Mark in terms of, I do generally get a feeling that everyone is now looking nobody wants events to go away. I think everybody without exception understands the importance. And if anything, as Ben said, we might come back bigger and better, that people will be craving public and contact with people and experiences. So my role as CEO is to make sure that all of my businesses stay there and stay strong, and then come out of the back of them as strong as possible. So more often than not, people are looking to move their event as opposed to cancel it, which is interesting in that me and David have worked with each other for a while now. The events industry makes 50% of their income between September and December. So if this was, I mean, obviously I'm fortunate that I don't run summer festivals, and I think that industry is totally on its knees, and obviously I feel sorry for my colleagues that have got exposure to that. But in terms of the events that I run and the venues that I operate, if we can recover and we can get activity going from September onwards, in terms of a total financial year, there's probably going to be less impact than you might have thought, considering the way that we're going to start this year. How do you do that? We just need to get smart. We're retaining our staff, because the buying cycle of events is quite a long one, actually, and also the planning of events, as Ben said, in terms of that Las Vegas event. So we are still actively planning events with people to get kick in from September. So we're busy doing that sort of thing, and also trying to sweat the diary as much as possible. So trying to get people to book events on days that traditionally they might not have done so. And if we can achieve that, my hope is that we will start replacing some of the losses that we've made over the last couple of months. Insurance is an interesting topic, because when Boris announced that he wasn't putting a worldwide, everyone was like, oh, if he cancels now, everyone can immediately go to their insurance company. I kid you not, I would say under 10%, if not worse, has the right cover in place. The second they call their insurance companies, everyone will realise that they don't have the extension for communicable diseases. Sitting here now, you'd say that that was a foolish thing to do, but if you sat with your broker 12 months ago and they said, oh, we're thinking about this extension, would you be interested? Without fail, everyone would look at the commercials of that and not. Live Nation, bizarrely, do have it and put it in place in January, so well done them. But even they have caps to their policy, so that is not going to replace it. So then we look to the government. The business rates cap, the first one they put in, or the holiday, was frankly ridiculous, because there's nobody in London that has rateable value of £55,000, so it didn't really impact anyone. But obviously the news yesterday, as a venue owner, is obviously going to put some considerable cash flow into the business, so obviously that's a positive. The loans, when they come in place, as always, it sounds great, but speaking to the banks, the detail's not there yet, and I don't imagine it will be for a couple of weeks. So for people who are less protected than us, that could be really a problem, because as I've heard a lot of people, and I've like a lot of country come avid LBC listener now, which is depressing, they need cash fast and they need it as quickly as possible. So it'd be interesting to see. And VAT, I've heard a lot about that. And a lot of the countries across Europe are looking at that. I mean, I would strongly, if anyone is listening is an events company, I would strongly suggest, and I'm not sure how legal this is, but I would not pay your VAT. You're much better the government coming to you and asking and negotiating than putting it into their bank account. I imagine news on that VAT will happen in the next week or so anyway, because that would be the next thing they cut. And it is much better to be negotiating with the cash in your bank. And that's it. I mean, I'm beaten up, but I'm not flawed. And I've got some really great people. And like everyone else, we had all of our businesses are cloud based. We've got some people who it doesn't matter where they work. The best thing about the events industry is we're resilient, we're innovative, and we will battle on. I saw an interesting post, someone described the events industry as the band on the Titanic as the boat was sinking, still playing on, trying to stay positive, and I've seen a lot of that. Just today, we started trying to move all of our weddings. We own a wedding venue in Sherwood Forest, and bizarrely, some of the people still don't want to move their weddings, and the answer we got back was, we just want to get married. So even at that level, it's just astonishing that what we've gone through. But I think there's no doubt about it that everybody understands the importance of events. There's no doubt about it. We're about to go into a period of very, very little social interaction. And there's no doubt about it that at the back end of this, everybody wants to go into do events, whether that's personally going to concerts and football games and to the theatre again, or running business meetings and conferences and award ceremonies. So, we are open for business. We are here. We are not going anywhere. And we are definitely planning now to come back bigger and better from the beginning of September. Thank you.
Simon, battered but not bound. Thank you. Thank you very much. We've got some questions that have come through. If anyone on the call has questions, type in the name of the speaker you want to ask the question to, and obviously type your question, and I'll try and relay as many of them as I can over the next 10 minutes. So a point from Matt McKee for Mark. Mark, I'm the opposite of what you're describing. I get anywhere from 5 to 10 invites to webinars and similar every day. Rare is the event I attend, I'm able to attend due to time challenges. But now I've got more time on my hands. No one's darkening my office doorway with interruptions. The phone isn't ringing. I'm enjoying the fact that I can finally have the chance to attend and learn. So don't stop.
And webinars in particular, yeah, look, I think we're going to get lots more invitations to these sorts of events, aren't we? And I think, you know, the fact that we usually avoid these things, and the fact that there are lots that we're all having the time to do is positive. I think we'll just become more selective about these, and over time I'm sure we'll get fatigued by them if this is the only thing we have. And I think, you know, that's the challenge for us, is, you know, finding other ways and other more interesting and engaging ways of talking to people. I hope this has been engaging.
I hope so too. So we've got a question from Simon Besley, who says, I've had so many other marketers say that they want to replace face-to-face with direct mail, as nothing else gives the same kind of level of tactility. Do people have any other ideas for getting DM and printed content out to B2B customers at this time? Anyone want to take that?
I'll take something on it. I guess the thing is that we don't know where they're going to be. So we need to find a way that they want enough to tell us, you know, potentially their home addresses, which probably has a massive GDPR issue around it as well that we wouldn't go into, but they need to tell you where they are in order for you to send them this. So it's going to have to be something that interesting and they want to receive. It can't just be like a leaflet drop or something, because, you know, I get enough of that through my home mailbox anyway.
But we're going to go back to like personal moments. Opening a piece of direct mail, you know, it's you and the thing, and you open it and you experience it. Sometimes it's, you know, elasticated butterflies that pop out of the envelope. Sometimes it's a, you know, it's a coupon. But, you know, we're going to have to go back to that. I'm sitting at my desk and something pops into my inbox or comes through on Teams or something, if you've got open access to the client. You know, what's the best way to get into their personal space and give them an experience that cuts through the noise?
The question, Doug Horn asks, do we think that the focus will turn more to social as target groups may have more time to surf their social platform? Mark, do you want to take that one?
So do I think they'll more move to social? I think so. I think, you know, there's a good way of reaching people. You know, it's obviously more broadcast than, you know, direct to individuals. I wonder also how much we might start looking to, you know, content syndication and all those sorts of things, ways of reaching people as individuals. I don't think, you know, you're going to see drastic changes to our mix outside of events, that is, I'm afraid to say, to Simon. But I don't think we'll see a drastic change to our mix outside of that, really. I think we'll see the same thing. You might just see some emphasis move to different parts of the funnel, really. You know, as I said earlier, I wonder whether people are in a moment to invest, particularly in, you know, CapEx heavy investments.
Okay. Another question from Abigail Knowles. This one is for Ben. Ben, what was the software that you used for your virtual event, and how did that go?
As Simon may know, it's a proprietary SAP, you know, made in Germany platform. they have their own kind of event platform. So but, you know, I mean, the thing that I have seen people doing quite a lot of is you know, doing things like drop-ins on Zoom, open drop-ins. If you look on Twitter over the last 48 hours, that just seems to be a kind of like a friendly open thing to do, is to say, you know, here I am, happy to chat, you know, let's have some ideas, you know. So there are solutions for different levels. But certainly in kind of corporate worlds, Teams seems to be the thing that's kind of, you know, that all our big clients are using. And it's, so far, it's been working really well.
Okay. So Ben, is that sort of external as well as internal, though, using Teams?
Yeah, so with our clients, as long, you know, we set our teams to have external access. So as long as our client has external access set, then we can communicate and do Teams calls within them. And you know, email is such a barrier now. You know, I mean, I wonder if one of the things of coronavirus is that we'll finally stop email. Is you know, this need for kind of contact is really important, and Teams is a much more kind of collaborative experience than email. It seems very cold to get an email back.
And a question for Simon from Steve Bishop. Steve asks, regarding the non-payment of VAT, what do you think is the worst that could happen?
The worst that could happen is if you never not paid your VAT before, the worst the government can do is charge you a surcharge. If you speak to an accountant about this, they will definitely advise you that this is likely to go into a period of national crisis. I think if you're a big business, they're going to all continue to pay it VAT. I'm really talking to the really small people that if you are struggling to pay your payroll and it's a choice, then that's a choice you're probably going to have to make. What you've got to remember, though, is VAT is not your money. You've taken that money on behalf of the government. So at some stage, you're likely to have to pay it. I'm not saying that you're never going to have to pay it, but before the government can get loans in place, I'm talking about really short-term cash flow. And it's an option to consider. And I know lots of people are looking at that now. I have also heard today on a call that I had with some senior people in the government that is one of the things that they're now considering to do, to look at VAT, because the problem the government have got is about getting cash quickly into the right people's hands, and loans is an option, but there's lots of administration around that, and although business bankers have done these sort of government back loans before, it's going to take them a while to get, and they're several weeks away from that. So what do they do to get cash into the business's hands quickly before they fail? And it just so happens that you've got the ATM bill coming up in the next week or so, it's definitely an option to consider. But I'm not condoning it, I'm just saying it's an option for you.
We'll send people the small print at the end of this so that it's clear. And question for Laura, how do you ensure business continuity when you have unexpected staff shortages or absences?
Not on mute, am I? So I think an element of it has to come down to your planning, that you know in any sort of couple of weeks who's meant to be working on what, and you know, and what projects are underway, what are the key deliverables that absolutely has to be done, and make sure you've ideally got more than one point person on that. Identify any skills gaps. So if you have, there's only one person, whoever manages a certain, you know, piece of software or channel or whatever, it might be worth upskilling some other people. That might be, you know, smaller companies, you've only got one CRM admin, you know, who can go in and make changes for others. It might be the management of social media. At the same time, I think with a lot of marketing stuff, we're in a very fortunate situation where we're always planning ahead anyway. And we have tools like email automation, and we have social media scheduling tools. So we can utilize those to ensure that, you know, those kind of pieces still happen. And then it's about understanding who's working on what, and, you know, and what really is business critical and what's the nice to have.
Thank you. A question for Mark from Richard Thompson. You mentioned, Mark, using video wherever you can. Can you explain how you're using video, including non-live webinar video?
So really, I was referring to our internal meetings. So I was really thinking about how you can maintain that element of team and group, and, you know, maintain the culture when we're meeting with our internal stakeholders more, or sorry, internal, you know, my own team. And it's just using things like this, making sure that we're using Teams, using the video capability of that, and can see each other's faces. And you know, the visual clues, or the body language, is often much more important than what you hear in your ears right from the voice. So I think the more we can do these sorts of things, you know, as long as the bandwidth stands up to it, the better, really. I was really talking about internal. External, it's just webinars at the moment. I'm afraid.
Thank you. A question for Ben from Matthew Kent. Matthew says, I work for a large US software company. We were due to have three major events over the course of the next couple of months. We were working hard to get client speakers from those events to agree to do individual webinars in the coming months as a replacement. Is there anything else you'd recommend that we can do to leverage that valuable content?
So that, if am I understanding right, they were running
three events. They've decided to repurpose, or they're trying to repurpose those three events as individual webinars. Yeah. But is there anything else they can do?
I think if you go back to that poll that you had at the top of the call about, you know, what are you going to do instead of events? Are you just going to kind of push the content out? Are you going to try and do something interactive? I mean, I think, you know, the great thing about, you know, Simon's events is, you know, they create the most amazing amount of moments. You know, people think about moments as just like people handshaking, spending time with each other. But actually, if you record events, you've then got a whole slipstream of content that can last you for a very long time, which is, you know, I think what SAP, to their credit, have done with this event in Las Vegas. So thinking intelligently about how you then use all that content that you've got can sustain us through till August, when, you know, maybe things start going again. And I think one of the things has struck me on this call is that we've spent a lot of time thinking about helping our team communicate inside our business, but actually how all our people represent themselves externally on all the kind of social platforms over this coming period is going to be really important too, about, you know, bringing our kind of whole selves to LinkedIn and Twitter and different platforms. And then if you harness that with content that you've then got from events and things, I think you can start to produce some quite interesting stuff. And I think that's kind of the space that I've been using.
Thanks, Ben. So one final yes, no answer from each of the panelists. This question comes from Andrew Rogerson. Do the respondents feel that there is a need to increase communications with clients in this time of crisis? Yes or no? Simon, you should go first.
From our point of view, I think we're in a period for the next week or so of just trying to sort out the current situation and get our heads around, like, losing an entire order book. We will get through that, and definitely after that point we will be back out talking to everyone.
Kind of maybe in the future is the answer I'm getting from that. Laura, what about you? Do you see the need to increase communications with clients right now?
I think yes, but as long as there's a need and a purpose for that communication. We're all being inundated by this stuff. So yes, if you need to tell them about something, but otherwise they've got more on their plate than a communication from a supplier.
Great answer, Mark. Mark, what's your view? Yes, no.
Muted. My answer was just yes, but in different ways.
It's worth unmuting for. And what about you, Ben?
Yeah, Mark said it earlier on. You know, meet their needs, don't sell.
So, look, thank you. That's all we've got time for. Thank you to our speakers, to Laura Hughes, to Mark Larwood, to Ben Danzi, to Simon Tracy. Thank you so much. And thanks to the team who've helped make this happen. So behind the scenes, Jason Neal, Louise Neal, Claire Sheriff, Josh Bench, Mark Larwood have all really been instrumental in making this play. So thank you. We're thinking of doing some more of these, perhaps a weekly check-in during the crisis as things move rapidly. So please do let us know if you'd be interested in that, in either attending or maybe even being a speaker. There's a poll here that you can complete for us to follow up. And if you'd like to be a speaker, click on yes, contact me. If you don't want to be a speaker but would like to virtually attend, click no and don't vote at all if you're really not interested in coming back to us. Whilst I'm waiting for that poll to come through, I should flag too, there's also our podcast series, which drops weekly, which you might want to try out. You can access it at businessmarketingclub.org.uk/podcast, which is also the address for being able to hear this recording as soon as we can get it ready, which will probably be about first thing tomorrow morning, I think now. And when normality does resume, please do look up the Business Marketing Club events programme, because it's well worth getting some face-to-face B2B marketing networking in your life. My name's Dave Stevens. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you have a great day and stay safe. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Bye. Bye, Dave.